Good morning and welcome to Backyard and Beyond. And this morning we're visiting with John Havoc, and we're going to talk about a book, The Ghosts of NASCAR is the basic title, and it goes from Daytona 500 to Harlan, Iowa, and places even closer. So good morning to you, John.
Good morning.
John, when I first saw this title, I thought, I don't know about this. You know, the racing is not in my bag of things. But I got more and more interested because you have some family history here as well as all these connections to Southwest Iowa. So let's jump into this and tell us the basic idea behind your book.
Well, I became interested in the whole business of racing as a boy when Johnny Buechamp, that's how the family pronounced the name, Buechamp, and he bought my grandfather's passenger car off a used car lot.
Huh, and amazing.
Yeah, and so he put a number on it, and they fixed it up a little, and he raced it at Playland Park and other places around in Southwest Iowa. And so that's what drew us to the races, to go see my grandfather's, and my grandfather lived in near Harlan. Okay. And so we went there and went to the races and watched the car race around the track. And I believe Tiny Lund probably won the first night we were there. And Johnny Buechamp may have won the semi feature. But nevertheless, that brought us to the races and we started following them. And I did particularly.
Yes, you became a real fan. And I guess that through your career, you then came back to this. But give us a little bit more about your background. You know, after you grew up near Harlan, then what happened in your life?
Yeah, I was actually I grew up in Council Bluffs and in Omaha, okay. And that was perfect because at one point in my lifetime, I delivered newspapers to the track promoter in Council Bluffs. I'd ride my bicycle with nonpareils right through the Playland amusement park in the late afternoon. I would drop off a paper at the track office.
Huh.
And so I could easily get to the track. You know, if I'd lived in Harlan or something, I would have had to find a ride. And then after 1955, they didn't race there. The Harlan people that I was following the closest, they were racing late models, and they didn't race these old jalopies that they raced at Playland in Council Bluffs. So I kind of lost interest, and I was in high school and I had other things to do, and I really kind of forgot about it all until many years later.
Yes, and in between there you were and are in Georgia?
Yeah, I became a college, after a lot of struggle, I earned a PhD, and I became a college professor, and I published, very academic papers that very few people read.
And now
I have this book.
Yes, and some controversy. Let's go back to that Daytona 500. There's this controversy over who won the very first race.
Yes, there was. It's considered to be one of the most famous and races in the history of NASCAR. And my guy, Johnny Buechamp, got a chance to race in that first Daytona 500. They used to race on the beach. And in 59, pressures and what have you just took them off the beach. And the NASCAR had built this big 2.5-mile track. And so this first big race, everyone wanted to get down there. And as it turned out, Johnny Buechamp drove the race car that his arch rival's mechanic had built for him.
Hmm.
It was an interesting twist because the Burdicks in Omaha had ties with Ford, and Ford had managed to get Thunderbirds included in the qualified cars for the race. And so several Thunderbirds were entered in the Daytona 500, and the Ford had called Roy Burdick, the mechanic, and asked him if he wanted to enter one. And he paid $5,500 and went to South Carolina and picked it up. North Carolina, and picked up the Thunderbird, fixed it up a little, and Buechamp met him in Daytona. And Johnny Buechamp won the first Daytona 500. And 3 days later, NASCAR took the race away. They said he didn't win.
But in all your investigating, he really did win.
Well, I tried to lay the evidence out without making any absolute statement about that. But as I studied it, there's just considerable evidence pointing in the direction that he probably won. And they used to just race and then they'd go to the next race and forget the last race. So no one was really paying attention to the big picture of what was going on. NASCAR had no resources back in the 50s. It isn't like today. And what happened was they had a really slack system of counting laps. And so somebody has to keep track of how many laps those cars go around the track. And NASCAR let the wives count the laps. Now, it could be friends or it could be just strangers counting laps. But the supervisor had certain favored drivers. One of the supervisors of the counting of laps had certain favored drivers, and that happened to be the supervisor. Part of it was he liked, now there's no evidence that he did anything wrong at all, but nevertheless, the supervisors had friends who were counting the laps. Mm. There were ways that a lap counter could add a lap to the race.
Well, after so many laps, you could
And the problem was that wasn't the half of it. The problem was there had been a pattern of Lee Petty, who finally was given the first Daytona 500. There was a pattern of his, after a race, he would protest and say he had more laps. The officials, the flagman, everybody, all the crowd would think somebody else won. They'd go look at the laps, and Lee Petty would sure enough have one more lap than everyone thought. And it's in print. It isn't just something, it's in
not
print.
Just you making it up.
Yeah, well, it's in print. At the time, other people were noticing this and commenting on it. It wasn't every race, but what it was if it was a big race with money involved, a lot of money involved for the racing, he'd just turn up with an extra lap. Hmm. And it was too many times to be just coincidence. Hmm. And so that shows, and that's a problem. Then the man who started NASCAR, Bill France, he wrote a little book about 5 years after the first Daytona 500 in which he describes the race and basically completely distorts the truth about what went on during the race. And that also kind of raises questions. Why would somebody do something like that? Buechamp was in the front almost the entire Daytona 500. And France writes that Buechamp followed, he writes something to the effect that Buechamp followed Lee Petty's, who was given the race, mm-hmm. Lee Petty's bumper and tailpipes for hundreds of laps,
That's not.
It wasn't the case.
Yeah. John, the title of your book, The Ghost of NASCAR, but the subtitle is The Harlan Boys and the First Daytona 500. And one of the things that I like about your book is that you have quite a few pictures. People who love to look at old cars will love those pictures. And you have a map that includes all these towns that were included in the racing, Council Bluffs, of course, Harlan, Atlantic, Oneida, Audubon, Denison, Irwin. And this is a local history in addition to be the stock car racing kind of history that you have here. So how can people get this book?
They can buy the book from the University of Iowa Press. So that's one way to do it, the University of Iowa Press. I have a website, www.ghostsofnascar.com, and they can log on if they can have computer access and look at a number of things there, and order the book. What it does is it just links through to the publishing. So I I'm kind of out of the loop of selling books.
But to be in the loop, we need to mention you're going to be in Harlan.
I am. October 3rd, I believe that's Thursday night, I'll be at the Harlan Library. You know, one thing I would like just to add, I appreciate that, the Harlan, you can't win these races if you're a driver without a good mechanic.
Uh-huh.
And the Swanson, Dale Swanson, the motor magician, was in Harlan, and it was just almost luck that in Harlan, Iowa, in that little southwestern corner, you would have several good drivers. One would be Buchamp, but then there was Lund, and there were others, actually. Harlan, boy, Harlan had a load of those guys. But Swanson was supplying several of them with the engines, including Don Pesch from Avoca.
Mm-hmm.
And he was building engines and things and backing these guys with race cars.
Okay, John, we're running out of time.
Okay.
I really encourage people to come and visit with you at the Harlan Library on October 3rd and go to your website, Ghosts of NASCAR, and your last name is Havick. We want to thank you very much for visiting with us and raising our interest in this book and the racing history.
It was a pleasure talking to you.
Until next time, here's a thought. If you only read the books that everyone else is reading, you can only think what everyone else is thinking.